Well, good morning and welcome to Citizens March 4th, 2026 Finance and Investment Committee meeting that is publicly noticed in the Florida Administrative Register to convene immediately following the Audit Committee meeting. Our meeting will be recorded with transcribed minutes available on our website. For those attending today's meeting through the public link, you're automatically in listen-only mode. Thank you for identifying yourself prior to addressing the committee. For those panelists, Chair Knight, we have no speaker requests for today's meeting. May I proceed with the official roll call?
Yes.
Chair Knight?
Present.
Chairman Baruff?
Here.
Governor Cumber?
Here.
Charlie Lydecker. Governor Lydecker is unable to attend today. Chairman, you have a quorum.
Thank you. I'd like to call the March 4th, 2026 FIC meeting to order with the first order of business approval of the December 10th, 2025 meeting minutes.
Move the minutes.
Second.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Minutes are adopted. Mr. Bhatia, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, Madam Chair, Mr. Chairman, board members. For the record, Kapil Bhatia from Raymond James & Associate. We are your financial advisor. I'll briefly go through the market update, but please stop me at any point of time. Consumer prices increased by 0.2% in January and 2.4% for the last 12 months. This is marginally less than where we were last month when the consumer prices increased by 2.7% for the prior 12 months. Part of the reason of this decrease in January was the oil prices, which went down by 1.5% in January. However, Operation Epic Fury is going to add something to the inflation, as we have seen with the energy prices, even though they have stabilized, but that is going to add again something to the inflation numbers at least next month. And I'll go through a little bit more of Operation Epic Fury a little later. Excuse me. Total non-farm payroll employment increased by 130,000 in January, but has shown little change since April. The current unemployment rate is 4.3%, and it is more like stable for the last 10 months. We expect unemployment rate to increase to somewhere in the range of 4.5 to 4.6% by the end of 2026. The labor force participation rate is expected to remain unchanged at 62.5%. The weakness in the labor market is a combination of lower supply of labor as well as weakening demand for workers. Both of these factors are keeping the labor force participation rate near the full employment level, but marginally expected higher rate of unemployment. AI is also changing at least the equation for recent college graduates. At least the hiring is slow with lots of uncertainty as it comes to tariffs and other economic factors as well as AI. That is one of the reasons for unemployment rate to increase to 4.5 to 4.6%. Real GDP increased at an annual rate of 1.4% in the fourth quarter after a significant increase in the third quarter of 4.4%. Overall GDP increase in 2025 was 2.2%, which was slower than 2024. We believe GDP to slow down marginally at 2.3 to 2.4% in 2026 after factoring in the effects of 2025 Reconciliation Act, federal spending shifts, higher tariffs, slower labor force growth, but the positive impact coming from One Big Beautiful Act. In September of 2025, Fed cuts its benchmark rate by 25 basis points for the first time in 9 months, but then they cut it twice again in October and December to the current range of 3.5% to 3.75%. The market is fully expecting 1 to 2 rate cuts. We expect 2 rate cuts in 2026 to the neutral rate of 3 to 3.25%, at least by the end of 2026 or by the third quarter of 2026. The yield curve is slightly inverted to flat for 1 to 5 years and upward sloping for 5 to 10 years, with the spread between 2 and 10 year treasury at approximately 59 basis points, as compared to negative 89 basis points 3 years ago. We expect 10-year treasury to remain range-bound where it is, largely because of large debt issuance by the federal government, which is 4.25% plus minus 25 basis point is what we expect for 10 years, and 2 years to remain range-bound from 3.25 to 3.5%. Operation Epic Fury is going to add something to the inflation, at least in the short run, and may change the path of the Fed funds rate, depends on how long this lasts. But the market will remain volatile until we have some certainty in terms of what's happening. And overall, the inflation is going to be an issue. If it's really a short nature, as everybody's talking about, 5 to 6 weeks, then it should have no impact on the markets, no impact on the interest rates, and no impact on all of the numbers. However, if it lasts longer, the oil prices can create more pressure globally, and global recession is possible. With that, I'll go into the reinsurance market unless there are any questions. So on the positive side, reinsurance markets are stable. Total industry insured losses from natural cat exceeded $100 billion for the sixth consecutive year, or from 2019 through 2025. Aside from California wildfires in the first quarter, the profiles of individual cat loss or cat events were not great enough to have any impact on reinsurance underwriting. That's partly due to higher attachment points as well as strategic portfolio rebalancing over the last couple of years by the reinsurers. Reinsurers also are getting benefit from the higher interest rates and has a positive effect on their mark-to-market position. Most of the market positions have more or less evaporated, except there are few small, large, longer duration in the portfolio for some of the reinsurers, and that still has some impact. But overall, most of the mark-to-market losses have evaporated. As a result, we expect reinsurance to have a really strong year once they report the 2025 numbers, with returns exceeding cost of capital for the industry for the third consecutive year. This has led to a record level of capital dedicated to the reinsurance sector, with more money coming in, especially by pension funds and large sovereign wealth funds. The total capital at this point of time in the traditional markets is around $540 billion and around $120 billion in the capital market. There is a strong demand for reinsurance because of the type of risk it provides and the return it provides. Risk transfer pricing for the June 1 renewal is expected to decrease again in 2026 by approximately north of 15% for aggregate price decrease. And that will lead us to almost 25 to 30% decrease over the last 3 years, from 24 to 26, which includes the projected numbers. The 1-1 renewal, especially its more European and U.S. earthquake and wildfires, saw a price decrease of 10 to 20% with the largest decrease in non-loss layers. This brings pricing closer to the 2023 levels when the interest rates were really low and after a couple of events. So we are getting into the stable market. Pricing and capacity in Florida have continued to improve due to tangible improvements in the Florida marketplace as a result of historic legislative reforms enacted in 2023. Of course, Citizens Policy Count shows that, and that has led to significant decrease in litigation expenses, loss costs. As a result, Florida property insurers recorded an underwriting profit for second year in a row in 2025 after 8 loss years from 2015 through 2023. All of this is positive for our reinsurance placement, as we expect a relatively very low rate, going back to 23, as I said. Our investment mark-to-market is coming down. It is sub 300 on a $9 billion portfolio, and it is continuing to evaporate. I'll stop and happy to answer any questions.
Any questions?
Chair, if I could I ask a question? So I'd just like to confirm what I think I heard. You expect the risk transfer and reinsurance markets to be improving based upon the conditions that you just described, correct?
Yes, Mr. Spott.
How do you track that through to underlying premiums for insurance in general? Is that having a positive downward impact on insurance premiums going forward?
It should. If the reinsurance market does comes down by, let's say, 20%, that's one of the highest input cost effectively for the insurers. So it will take some time. So because the reinsurance rate will be effective June 1, that's when the cover really starts. So it will have some lag when the policies renews. That should translate into, over the next 12 months, the impact of reinsurance. Just like when the reinsurance rates increased, the insurance rates were increasing and vice versa.
What do you expect the lag time to be between, you know, the decreasing cost of risk transfer and reinsurance and the impact to be on rates that policyholders are seeing?
The primary insurance have to submit their rates to the OIR, and OIR approves it, so they actually include that numbers in there, what their cost of doing business is effectively. So there is some lag in a sense of when it translates into it, it's in projections, and as the policies renews, it shows up. Jennifer, you want to add?
I was just speaking to Brian. They can do a supplemental filing if they find out reinsurance was a lot less than anticipated and it goes down. We can do another filing to help bring rates down, but it's a supplement filing.
In the past couple of years, we've actually experienced cost of risk transfer and reinsurance to be less than what we had anticipated up front. So this is a trend that's started a while back and it's continuing. Based upon conditions you're seeing, do you expect this to continue into the future?
Depends on the events and losses. So we have seen this trend from 24, 25, and suddenly it's continuing in 2026. More capital, lower losses, less events. If there is a 1-in-100-year event, whether in Florida, hurricanes or wildfires or earthquake, that can have a significant impact. So it's directly a function of how much capital is there. So it's hard to predict unless you know where the events are. Yeah. It's projected to be the losses are going to be larger with the recent inflation. The replacement cost is higher. So hopefully there is no large enough event. The insurance market is stable for up to $100 billion of losses. That's how there is. Anything over north of $150 billion will have impact. Anything less than $100 billion is uneventful.
Thank you.
And I would also state that 2025 was probably the first year that we saw significant savings with reinsurance from the reinsurance market.
Madam Chair, can I make a comment or
yes,
question
definitely.
For that matter? And thank you for letting me sit in on the committee, even though I'm not a committee member on this. Great report. Kind of further on what Governor Spotswood was just discussing, obviously, I think you and I had a brief conversation about alternatives in the marketplace from reinsurance and bonding and things of that nature and the capacity that is out there now. Do you have a number in mind as we're going through our reinsurance, and obviously the board has authorized up to a certain amount of spend and or limit, but do we have an idea, a true idea of where we think we're going to purchase at, number one? Number two, what we're looking at from a approximate rate reduction overall on that?
Yeah, yes, that's the next section.
Oh,
we'll
okay.
go over the layer charts and the reinsurance update.
I did not read the agenda. But I guess back to your point, though, Koppel, because I think to your point, there's huge capacity in the marketplace right now, right? The earnings are good. The interest is good. Knock on wood, right? We haven't had a large amount of disasters out there. We're seeing new carriers into the marketplace, right, come in as evidenced, I think, by what we heard from Ms. Montero earlier, that we have 395,000 policies, which is the least amount of policies out there, right? And so what we're doing is working. I just question on some of the carriers, and again, this is more of an OIR issue than anything, is are we making sure that they're fully funded correctly and getting that reinsurance that they should be? And you would think that with some of the things that are going out in the marketplace, with the reinsurance marketplace, that should be an easy yes. But I would just kind of ask you, because I know you see a broader spectrum than maybe what I see, and so just kind of your take on that.
Yes, we had a number of conversations. Suddenly OIR looks at it. Most of the insurers, even the new carriers who are coming into the marketplace, should not have any problem funding 1-in-100 years based on where the markets are. Suddenly there is a huge demand, so they may have to pay a little bit more pricing premium because of not knowing it, but some of them are not really new. Mm-hmm. They are just expansion of existing with the different brand names, et cetera, et cetera. Overall, there is enough capacity available, I think, for first 1-in-100 years, and then for the second event, 1-in-50 or 1-in-30 years, they should be sufficient. The only constraint to the marketplace, which is basically if we have 1-in-200-year event or 1-in-150-year event or number of very small events, that could dislocate the market.
Right.
But looking at last 20 years, we are even going back to Andrew, we haven't had that, even including 04 and 05, market should be stable. And 04 and 05, as you may remember, some of you may remember, we had 8 events, 4 back-to-back. They were all small, relatively speaking.
So it's not so much about the severity, it's more about the frequency is what I'm hearing you say.
Especially the cat fund.
And in that instance, we could have some concerns if we had crisscrossed your point, 0405, where we had multiple storms throughout the system. Okay, good. Thank you.
The structure of CAT fund has changed because CAT fund used to attach for each event. Mm-hmm. Now for the third event, it comes down to a lower. So there are some hedging around that. So I think it should be better. So overall, I would say it's very positive. We have seen it over the last 10 years.
Good. Well, thank you for the update.
Thank you. No questions? Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Montero, perfect lead-in to the risk transfer program preliminary update.
Good morning. I'm going to actually start backwards with the redemption first, because that takes into effect when we go through the risk transfer program. So in 2024, through Everglades Re, $1.1 billion through Series 2024-1 bonds were issued across three different tranches, and with a three-year maturity and a weighted gross rate on line of approximately 11.4. The bonds were issued with a callable premium after the first 2 years. And that's determined on basically what the TIV is as of February 28th. So they're callable on May 13th, and they're subject to the TIV on February 28th for a call premium of 0.50%. As of February 27th, Citizens TIV, total insured value, by the way, is $104.61 billion, which is in that lowest quadrant the lowest level of the call premium. So since basically our exposure has gone from way over $500 billion down to $104 billion, this is something that, and the fact that the risk transfer pricing in Florida is decreasing by approximately 25%, as Koppel mentioned, the improvements in the risk transfer market and because of the legislature and the marketplace, it's to our benefit, we think, to call these bonds, and actually we'll have the flexibility for the structure for 2026. We'll be able to call them, and we could issue less than half and still come out on above than if we were to keep them. We would save approximately $67 million. And I'm not saying all this very clearly, but it's in here. Basically, it's to call the bonds, and because they're up high now, because we shrunk, we paid a much higher price for them. Pricing is down 30%, so we'd like to call them so that we could issue a smaller amount, lower down, at a cheaper price, and save $67 million. That's the gist of that.
You had me at saving $67 million.
Right.
I'm a pretty simple guy. And,
right. I don't see it as an action item.
There's not an action item for this. It's more as just letting you guys know it's just a financial transaction that we're going to just part of risk transfer.
Yes.
Jennifer, I've heard different numbers. What is our policy count now?
Our policy count as of last Friday is in my book. I have it.
I know you do. That's why I've waited for you. I'm a little confused.
Here it is. As of Friday, February 27th, the policy count was 336,461.
Okay, because just for the board, we've been hearing numbers of 390-some thousand policies. So we're actually at 336,000 policies, down from 1.425 million thereabouts.
Correct. The 395 was prior to the February takeout. That was 55,000 policies.
Correct.
Commercial, I have the exact number. Commercial is 5,535.
5,535. One more five.
Perfect size for a clearinghouse.
Yeah. Five, good. Thank you.
All right, so
that was
the refinance that you're doing of the bond issues, the maturity isn't getting extended. The maturity is just, the maturity is 36 months?
Yes.
Okay. So, and then do they have a provision where you could refinance those after 24 months and liquidate them?
Yes, we'll make sure to include that at no call this time, because
at no cost, at no cost this time, instead of the half point premium.
Correct.
Okay, but even so, we save $67 million. So
There are two factors in savings. One, it's the reduced size. The second is, as I said earlier, reinsurance pricing is down 30%, so we get advantage of that.
Got it.
So a combination of
those. Well, that's a good thing to do.
And in addition to that, Lightning Re also goes away. Their contract ends at the end. Or was
the mature?
Oh, yeah, they mature. So they'll be gone before June 1st. So those will also be off the program.
Great.
Thank you, Governor Spotswood. Did you have a question or comment?
So, just to say it again, because I want to hear it. So with the reinsurance that you're proposing to purchase, which is a whole lot less than we purchased in prior years, even with a probable maximum loss for a 100-year storm, we would only go through 26% of our existing surplus.
Yes, that is. We haven't gotten to the layer charts yet. But that is correct.
Is that the strongest position that you've been in since I've been on this board?
Probably since you've been on this board. Yes.
2014. I was going back way back when it was 20%, but very close to the strongest ever.
Yeah, I recall going through all the surplus and not being able to fully cover and having to go out for assessments in order to cover the last 4 or 5% of probable loss. So, and is that a direct result of reducing the number of policies and total exposure?
A lot of it is based on that, the fact that we've gotten smaller. And our surplus is still $5.14 billion. So you'll see, if the layer chart went past the 1 in 100 year, you'd see a lot of green above that before you see the citizens' policyholder surcharge kick in.
So I guess what that sets up for me is Citizens has accomplished its goal of reducing its exposure, total exposure. It's well capitalized. It can cover a probable loss for a 100-year storm. And it puts his board in a different position when it's looking at setting rates and premiums and being actuarially sound going forward. I'd like to think. Anyway, yes. Not really expecting you to tell me yes, but that's what I'm looking for.
Going, yes, yes.
Continued with the
okay, so the second thing here, or I guess it was the first thing, is actually the executive summary and the layer charts, and we can walk through those quickly. And as I mentioned, you're not going to see 2024 bonds are not on here. The Lightning Re is not on here. That's why I wanted to cover those first to explain why. All you see is last year's $1.525 billion cap bonds. And then we had $1.369 billion of private reinsurance, but that was a single-year deal, so we have to go back to market. So in total, we've got about $1.525 billion of reinsurance on here. We're looking to have new coverage of about $1.45 to total almost $3 billion to give us full coverage to protect the surplus in a 1 in 100-year event on the layer chart. Specifically, and to Governor Spotswood's point, we would only be exposing 26% of the surplus in this scenario. The proposed program would have a sliver layer alongside the cap fund, which would provide about $170 million in excess of $1.14 billion of annual per occurrence coverage that would cover personal residential and commercial residential losses. The layer would be placed in the traditional market, and it would work in tandem with the mandatory coverage provided by the CAP fund. Layer one would sit right above that in the yellow, and that would, I guess it would be all everything above that in the yellow, and that would be this above the silver layer. The layer would provide $2.81 billion of coverage for personal residential and commercial residential losses from the capital markets and the traditional markets as follows. Approximately $1.28 billion of occurrence and annual aggregate coverage from the traditional and capital markets, and then a capital markets renewal, which is in the light blue, of risk transfer placement through Everglades Re, and that's the 2025-1 program that we issued last year. And so basically our next steps are to continue to work with the markets as well as our financial advisor and evaluate available options relating to the structure, terms, pricing, and other relevant matters as regards to 2026 program. This layer chart is, it is the PML on there is
at $5.648 billion. That is projected from 12/31, and we project that out to September 30th. And you can see at the top of that, it includes 10% LAE, and it is a reduction of about 8.5% of the personal and commercial residential, and about 26.8% reduction for the commercial non-residential growth adjustment for both of those. So we do take into effect the fact that we have DPOP going on and that we're going to also have summer months that won't have DPOP. So that's the big question, is getting it to the right number projected out to September 30th.
Okay. Questions? Thank you.
Can I ask one just quick question? I hope it's quick, sorry. Should we be thinking about anything other than traditional reinsurance and bonding for reinsurance? Is there something else in the marketplace from an alternative funding standpoint?
To a captive.
Captive? Okay. Do we have any, and I don't disagree, by the way, I'm just probably kind of a loaded question for myself, so just to kind of understand, to kind of think where our heads are. Do we have any data on other states and or city, well, probably more state-run pools of some sorts of when and where they formed it, why they formed it, and approximate savings and things of that? Because ultimately, obviously, if we're trying to depopulate citizens, right, we want to get folks out and get them good coverage. To Governor Spotswood's point, I think with the way the marketplace is, at least in my opinion, it leads us to, as a board, that we should be thinking about exploring alternative funding options, right, to buy what I would consider traditional reinsurance and things of that nature that could ultimately benefit the policyholders, right, in the state of Florida. Do you, Koppel, or do you, Jennifer, have any idea of what other states are starting to do this type of
and
stuff?
You're talking about, like, residuals markets with other states?
Yeah, either residual
by
markets
far
or just
the hugest,
or, yeah,
the most large one. I don't know that they...
We're getting smaller.
Yeah, we're getting smaller.
We are still one of the big ones just because we
sure
are in Peninsula.
Yeah, yeah.
And Texas is growing. California market
right
is completely dislocated. So Texas recently... Texas Windstorm recently restructured its program. They have been one of the large buyers of reinsurance. None of the state's residual programs, I mean, they only look at it traditional market and cat bonds, because captive does not provide the tax savings, and most of the state's entities have the tax savings program. So most of our clients, which we work with, earthquake, wildfire, different states, the only entity, public entity, which have created in a captive for a specific reason, and I can go through it if you are interested, is MTA New York, because they have different business pieces, from a subway system to a railroad to Metro
right
North to the bridges. So they have created a captive as they do a cost allocation and to do it, and they get a significant amount of FEMA funding. So they have a different reasons to buy it. Just because we don't have a tax savings, captives can provide us some benefits, in especially if in a stronger position. We'll evaluate it after this year is done, and hopefully we can place it effectively and efficiently and take advantage of the market and do the economic analysis. And certainly, if we decide if it's efficient mechanism for us to come back to the board with more details, that makes sense. Until now, it wasn't inappropriate because of the tax play what
right
we have. But we'll
yeah,
certainly
I mean,
come back to the board.
I would be, from a board standpoint, I would be in favor of us coming, not today, obviously, but coming back to the board with an analysis of this, of looking at a potential alternative funding, a.k.a. captive arrangement, to see if it makes sense. We'll trust, obviously, you and your experience on that, but just something to, as a takeaway. So, yeah, I appreciate that. Obviously, can't be done by 6-1. I got that. So,
and the markets are good, so we want to take complete advantage of it, and we are buying significantly
yeah
less. But we want to create, especially, it would be helpful below the CAT fund, because that's where we expose most of our capital effectively, as you can see it in the layer charts. 26%, but almost 20% of that is below the CAT fund. If we somehow we can optimize that program, we have never been in a position because we never had significant capital.
Mm-hmm.
But hopefully one more year, and then we can circle back and see okay the economic analysis and a cost-benefit analysis.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for that.
Just to echo that, I'm the new guy on the board. I'm not in the industry. But one of the things I have picked up is that obviously, this is one, you know, reinsurance market stability is one of the most important things to our, you know, our ability to continue on a fiscally sound basis. And so I would encourage, yeah, anything you can do to come up creatively that can detach us from that instability in the reinsurance market would be a very productive exercise worth us looking at.
I think legislative have done their part to it, and that has stabilized the reinsurance market, because if you can model it, they can price it. If you cannot model it, you cannot price anything effectively. That's where we were, and the loss models have been very comfortable with what the numbers coming in. If you can take out the litigation expenses, I think the reinsurance market will remain there until there is something else. Losses, you can see it, that may have an impact, but that impact is not as large because you can plan for it and you can you know exactly the events are going to happen. It's an insurance and reinsurance. You expect losses to happen as long as you can plan and project it, and the models reflect that. So I think we're in a good position at this point of time. I mean, it was a self-inflicted problem. We knew it was happening for years. Now we have solved the problem. The legislative have, so suddenly it's helpful for everybody. Thank you.
Chair, if I could, one more time. Thank you. Yes.
So it just strikes me that one of the most important things we can do, and I don't know how to accomplish this, the result would seem terrific, but if we can maintain our size and not grow back to a huge company again, would certainly make it easier for us to accomplish that objective. And so what we start thinking about doing in order not to grow again in the future to the size we were, that we struggled to buy so much reinsurance, it cost us so much money in prior years, and to have so much exposure, to be in a position today where for a probable maximum loss that we've got more than enough surplus to cover and still have surplus left over, is an enviable position for us to be in since I started on this board. And it's based in large part just on size of the company. So we need to figure out what to do to keep from growing as we have in the past.
Keep the market healthy and we won't grow. That's what really triggers us growing, is when the outside market, something happens to it and it becomes broken, then policies come to Citizens. They start, if reinsurance rates, for example, go through the roof, companies will start shedding their exposure because they won't be able to afford it and they won't have anywhere else to go but to here. So we typically grow because of outside market conditions.
And the other thing that I was kind of alluding to but didn't want to say it directly is the focus on those portions of the state where this entity is really set up to serve those markets where others can't. And just going into every single market in the state competing against a private market, I don't think is a place for us to be.
Thank you.
I have one more
yes,
section.
Yes, investment portfolio update.
Yeah, the investment portfolio update. Thank you. So slide one. So the total portfolio is $8.84 billion with approximately $7.58 billion externally managed by 9 investment managers. The remaining $1.6 billion is internally managed and primarily consists of liquidity for claims and operating funds. Internally managed funds are invested in short-term U.S. Treasury securities or money market funds. The portfolio is very conservative and stable with sufficient liquidity to pay all operating expenses as well as all current or any potential future claims. The total portfolio average duration is stable and currently just over 2.23 years. As of December 31st, 2025, the one-year total income and net income total are 6.07% and 3.36% respectively. As of year-to-date, February 2026, or 2 months, the net income and total income return are 0.54% and 1%, respectively. Slide two, please. The current Fed fund rate after the recent cut is 3.5 to 3.75%. 1 to 2 rate cuts are expected in 2026 before reaching its terminal rate of 3 to 3.25% by mid-year. The yield curve is now upward sloping, starting with 2-year maturities, with 2 to 10-year spreads of approximately 55 basis points. The yield curve is expected to continue to increase its upward slope as the short-term rates come down and the long-term rates remain unchanged, primarily due to large fiscal deficit and the increased Treasury issuance. Slide
Slide three, please. The portfolios have very strong credit quality. Approximately 79% of the portfolio is in money market funds or rated A or higher, and approximately 42% of the total portfolio is in treasury and agency securities or in money market funds. And the last slide. The portfolio income return is stable, and the 2026 income return and total income return are expected to be approximately 3.2% and 5.7%, respectively. The incremental interest income continues to come in from higher interest rates with increased investment in shorter duration securities. And lastly, the portfolio still has a negative mark-to-market value, but it has decreased over the last 3 months, and it's declining at a faster pace as interest rates decrease and the portfolio duration shortens. And that completes my report.
Thank you.
I have a question, Madam Chair.
Yes.
What is the difference between the internally managed funds on a return compared to the externally managed funds?
The returns are very similar. Internally managed fund is relatively very, very short duration, like 0 to 6 months, because we want to pay all the claims.
Yeah, I understand. I just want to know how many basis points we're losing on the internal management as opposed to the external management.
So I'll just go through the income return because that's more relevant. So that for the last 1 year, the internally managed return was 4.21%, and the externally managed return was closer to 375.
So the internally managed has actually exceeded the external management.
And the reason for that is when the yield curve was inverted and the short-term rates were significantly higher.
Right.
And as the Fed has started to cut the funds rate, it is going to be less than that. But we expect almost to be equal as the older portfolio matures and becomes shorter. But the total return on externally managed portfolio is higher, as Jennifer said, because some of the mark-to-market is evaporating.
And since I know that you become a mind reader, my next question, you know the question is going to be, if we liquidated our portfolio, how big a loss would we have to take?
As of end of February, the last day of February, prior month, $293 million.
I'm sorry?
$293 million.
$293 million?
Correct. And it's a $9 billion portfolio. However, each month that, even if the interest rates remain where they are, ignoring the duration factor, it's evaporating by $8 to $10 million a month.
$8 to $10 million now?
A month, with no change, keeping everything else constant.
So it's got a long way to bleed off because the interest rates have not come down as we had anticipated a year ago.
That is correct. However, the short-term interest rates are coming down. So as our portfolio matures, the interest rates automatically come down because the yield curve is becoming normal. So that pace will be faster. We expect almost 24 months before it comes down to zero.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. There's no new business that I'm aware of?
No.
That concludes.